Welcome to the What's Next Office of Communications. Hi, everybody. The architect is here. Sitting across from me is the professor.
Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good.
Joseph Amato here with Anthony Caputo. So from time to time, guys, we are going to answer some questions that you have. We'll just dedicate a small podcast to that, a little thing, a little more interactive. We have a question from Kelly Elizabeth, and I hope we're pronouncing this correctly. Kelly Elizabeth Stolz. If we are not, please let us know phonetically how to say that. It actually piggybacks on a question from another fan of ours, Steve Rogers. No, not Captain America, but the dude's name is Steve Rogers. And it has to do with why. Read the question as it says, as it's written, actually. Can you please address the impetus behind the recent resurgence of interest in The West Wing? Steve asked a question regarding the same thing, but specific to podcasts. So we wanted to tackle that. I did a little bit of research on this. So I was looking around. I was looking for some people's reasons. And generally speaking, people point to the current political climate, right?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. I would agree. Yeah.
And I actually don't disagree with that at all. But I do think there's more at play, and I think we might agree on this as well. I think the number one, the baseline for all of it is Netflix.
I agree.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely.
It's just made everything so much more readily available. I mean, mm-hmm. But prior to that, I own all the West Wing DVDs. And it took me a while to get together, and it wasn't cheap. It was very expensive, and you know, once Sorkin left, I didn't watch the show anymore, so I didn't finish the series until like 2009. And it's because I didn't have the DVDs, but had I had Netflix, I probably would just binged it then and there.
And I think it's the coming together of two things. I think it's one, right, this whole streaming society is coming together that you can stream everything, and two, that The West Wing just happened to be on Netflix.
Yeah, like it could have been one of those shows that was on there. A lot of shows maybe sometimes
didn't
go
make
away,
it,
come
or
back.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, and the fact that I think you know Netflix is just such a monopoly, I would say, in the streaming business. If not,
Hulu's up there. I don't know what Amazon
but Netflix
does.
Netflix is Netflix.
I only have Netflix, so I don't really. I mean, I'm not trying to. You know, this isn't we're not plugging
Netflix.
Netflix
is the Kleenex of streaming.
It's the Xerox of photocopying.
It's the
chapstick. Oh fuck!
Of lip balm.
Is that right? Yeah, right. Because chapstick is a brand.
Yeah.
You beat me.
Hasha!
I don't have it. I got nothing. But I think that is first and foremost. I think if you remove Netflix / streaming / the ability to access the show so easily, so cheaply, I really don't believe it would be as popular as it is today. Now, that aside, okay, because we can agree on that, right?
Yep, I agree.
Okay. So that aside, I think that just because it's on Netflix isn't the only reason why it's popular. I think that is part of a chemical formula or an ingredient in a, you know, much broader dish, so to speak. And I think there are a couple of other things at play, because not every television show that's on Netflix has had a resurgence like The West Wing, and certainly hasn't had the popularity necessarily. I do think politics does play a huge role, especially since it is an election year, and this election year has been just insane, and it's been very long. Also, a little bit of a warning. I think this might be the first time that we really get into politics. I mean, that's
sort of.
I mean, it's never been our goal to, but the nature of the question kind of has us.
A political charge to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think a lot of that has to do with the way our listener that this comes from, Kelly, she makes a very good point. She says that she thinks a lot of it has to do with the, as she says, the vitriol of the current political landscape, that it engenders a longing for a time, actual or imagined, which is pretty smart, when the voices of idealism and the voices of pragmatism created a figure that led to effective governance by individuals dedicated to the conviction that politics is about service, not personal power. I'm not sure I could have said it better, because she explicitly nails right on the head what these characters do. You have this disparate stance between these characters where some of them are the pragmatists, some of them are the idealists, but they're all moving towards the same goal, which is effective governance. Sometimes that gets lost a little bit, like you have to play power games. I think it was in episode 4, Five Votes Down, when Leo says to, maybe it was the head of the Black Caucus, I don't remember, it doesn't really matter what the second thing on my list is if the first thing on my list, keeping the White House strong, isn't number one. So sometimes you can't focus on the issues. You got to worry about keeping the White House strong so that you can worry about the issues. But that's exactly what Kelly's talking about.
Yeah.
Government isn't about that anymore. And that's whether you're Republican or Democrat. You know.
I agree. And when we watch the show, it's the second coming of Christ.
It really is.
You know?
Yeah, it really.
Neither.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to that. But I want to make sure that we get this, because this is how politics today has become so twisted, distrusted. You know, it's cynical. So it gets to the point now where people are looking for outsiders. People are, feel however you want to feel about Donald Trump. His biggest appeal is that he's not an insider. Feel however you want to feel about Bernie Sanders. His biggest appeal is that he's not a true Democrat and that he's not an insider of the Democratic Party. And you look at, you know, Jeb Bush was basically laughed out of the, you know, the Bush family is basically laughed out of the election. And the biggest knock on the Clintons is that they are career politicians. So I think that has a heavy hand in it. And I don't think you can overlook that at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have nothing else to really add to that.
And I would also say that, you know, the other element to this that I think is very, very important is, and I don't think it can be, you know, overshadowed, it's a phenomenal show. I know I say it all the time, but because it is so good, that's why it stands up and people keep coming back to it.
Yeah.
And if it weren't this great a show, I think it's one of the best shows of all time. There are very good shows. I really do believe this is one of the best. So I think it always has the ability to trap people in and keep them watching. And it always kind of makes it so that people want to go back and watch it again.
I mean, take aside the actors and the actresses, because they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
I really do think it also has to do with Sorkin. He is just... You know what engrosses me is just... Sometimes I replay scenes.
Yeah.
Just to, like, hear the dialogue.
Exact. That very good point.
It's just so articulate. It's so clear. They convey the most beautiful, eloquent message in such... in brevity.
It's almost like poetry.
It really is.
Because Sorkin, when he would go to the plays when he was a kid, and he would always say how he loved the sound of the people speaking, the rat-a-tat-tat. Like, just the musicality, I think he says, of dialogue. And you can tell that he loves it, but he said he also learned at a very young age that that stuff is dessert. And you don't get to dessert if you don't have your vegetables. And the vegetables is the content. So if you don't have anything that you're talking about, it doesn't matter if it sounds good, because it's going to be empty. You need both. Mm. So he always understood that it was kind of this cyclical thing. You'll get people attached if you can create the musicality, but it won't have any enduring, lasting power if there is no substance to it. So he knew to do both. And he, to your point, very well said, he does them perfectly.
I've learned a lot about just myself and how to talk, and just like my, just the dialogue in that show alone, I think has shaped my my opinions and my viewpoint and my perception on different issues.
Well, that was the hope when we did this show in the beginning, that it would challenge our minds in the way we see things. It certainly did when I first watched it, and I guess it's doing that for you.
I mean, my goal to going into this was to become closer to you, Joe.
Yeah, well, success, but... I guess, is what's happening. You've been in my house quite a bit.
Success is all around.
It is. The last point before we move on to Mr. Rogers, a.k.a. Cap, is that... And Kelly brings it up. It's the ideal. I generally think that people gravitate more towards idealistic things and hold on to idealistic things than they would dystopian or maybe more cynical things.
It's a double-edged sword of hope, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I just think it's a psychological thing. I think because it's so hopeful, it does make you feel better. And I always think you gravitate more towards things that make you feel better.
Right, yeah.
So,
yeah, we've talked about that too, you know, but you don't want to hold on too long because then that could come to bite you in the butt too.
It can. That's why it's good that in this case it's just a TV show.
Right, yeah.
Just pivoting quickly to Mr. Rogers, I didn't mean to do that.
You just lit me up.
I know. His question was more towards why is there such an influx of podcasts? And I think that is generally because of the Gilmore guys. I think they changed the way podcasts are done. I think once people realized that you can monetize, because they had so much success, I think people just jumped on the bandwagon. I think they thought to themselves, what show can we do? It was part in the reason why I think we wanted to do ours. But to be honest with you, the reason why I wanted to do this one is because this is one of my favorite shows of all time. And the podcast that I had listened to and still currently listen to, I'm not going to go and call things out by name because I just think that that's rude and distasteful. They leave me wanting. I don't think they see the depth and the quality of the writing and the acting.
So wait, what were these guys called that you said that? So the resurgence of podcasting, you think, has
not
in
the resurgence
part,
in podcasting. The reason why there's so many podcasts about The West Wing.
Oh, in that's particular,
what, yes, that's what Steve asked. He said, "Why about The West? Why there are so many now?" When I first wanted to do this, there was only one, and I really didn't like it. And then we started ours, and you know, there was a couple more, and I was like, all right, they're still not getting all the things.
You know what? But I mean, all right, yeah, I see where you're coming from. But even to take Steve's point even further, I do think that as of late, there is an influx of podcasting. I just think there are so many. I think at this point today, I don't know the data behind it, but I would say that there's more podcasts today than ever before.
Well, yeah, and I
think people
that's
are mostly
grow.
Interested in podcasting.
I agree.
Yeah,
I think that's only going to grow because I think people really—it's cheaper, easier. It's very accessible.
Do you think that's why? Like that, where is it coming from? Like podcasting, I would never even think of podcasting.
Because we're in a society now where people feel the need to share their own ideas.
Maybe.
I mean, they share everything about their daily lives on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That it's like, okay, well, why don't I just make a show about me and tell people my own thoughts and ideas? And I find that to be somewhat grotesque. I realize that it may seem like that's what we're doing, but to me, this show is less about us and it's about the content that's created by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Sorkin. I would not have done the show if it was just you and me being like, so Ant, what'd you do today? Like that just has, I just find that to be disgusting. Offense. I said that, no offense. Yeah, fuck it. You know what? I already said it. I'm not even going to pretend like I didn't mean offense. But to me, it comes down to the content for us. And I really feel like the reason why is because there's so much with The West Wing is because people look for a show that this is you look at The West Wing, it's totally binge worthy. It holds up to this day. It is extremely popular. It has both perfect elements of drama and comedy. So you can talk about, like we do, stuff that's heavy, but then also stuff that's light. And you can really navigate both of those planes. And I think that when people were looking to replicate maybe the formula of Gilmore Guys, at least insofar as their success is concerned, this was a show that was ideal for that. Not to mention the fact that nowadays, every new television show almost comes with its own marketing team breaking down every episode. I think the show Walking Dead has like a half an hour show after each episode breaking down the episode that just aired. Yeah. Something ridiculous like that. So you kind of have to go back into the vault of shows of yesteryear, because AV Club was always doing write-ups on Mad Men after each episode aired. Just that Walking Dead example. So I think all those things combined leads to this popularity in the West Wing as far as podcasts.
Yeah, interesting. Where did podcasts start? Was it like I would think that its roots are in radio.
Probably.
Right? Yeah. I don't know. It's just an interesting thing to point out. Like, I'm thinking about this, how prevalent podcasts are these days.
They wanted to be able to disseminate their ideas so much easier.
I also think, you know what, now that I think about it, probably satellite radio is probably really...
That's a good point. That could have been part of it.
What?
I said that could have been part of it.
Oh, you said I could have been part of that?
No.
I was like, oh, you're not telling
me something?
I could
have been part of that. I could have done that.
Yeah, I know. I know you could.
I could have had a show called The Architect. Yeah. If you don't know what The Architect, why we're calling ourselves that, you have to listen to In Excelsis Deo Part 1.
Yeah.
It'll be good.
It was great.
Those are our code names if we were in the secret, if we had to be protected by the Secret Service. I think that's, did we cover it all?
I think so. Let us know, guys.
Yeah, if you have other questions, we are excited to answer them, and we will dedicate a nice 10-15 minute block, maybe longer. You know, if the question/questions warrant it. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Kelly and to Steve for the questions, and we'll see you guys with an episode very soon. Thanks,
guys.